listening to the Miles to Go podcast, the go-to source for travel tips, news, and reviews you can't afford to miss. Now, here's your host, travel expert Ed Pizza.
Welcome back to another episode of the Miles to Go podcast, where we bring you the latest travel news, tips, and tricks each week to help you save money and travel better. Just wanted to update you guys as well. I do have a second podcast called Now Boarding, and we're going through a bit of a format change there. So if you're looking to hear the what we believe to be the best stories of the week on Boarding Area every week, you can tune into the Now Boarding podcast, which you can find on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, all those great places where you find Miles to Go as well. As far as Miles to Go this week, we are adding in a new segment that's going to be in rotation. I wanted to make sure that we were covering destinations that people like to travel to, aspirational destinations, if you will, that you might not know everything about. So the new segment is going to be from folks who have been to an area multiple times and understand it at a deep level. And so up this week, we've got Summer, my friend Mommy Points, back, and we're going to do Hawaii in 10 minutes or less. Look for more of these 10 minutes or less segments coming up in the future. We'll touch on the basics of a specific destination, help you get started on planning your first trip or your 10th trip, if you will. Love to hear your feedback on that segment and other ideas for places that you'd like us to cover in depth. After Summer, we've got Jen back to cover another deal segment. Hilton has a bunch of new Amex offers to take advantage of that will save you money on hotel stays coming up. And lastly, we wrap up with Leslie from Trips with Tykes talking about Disneyland and what your proper hotel strategy should be there. In the meantime, if you guys are enjoying the show, I'd love it if you would subscribe and rate the podcast. If you subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or wherever your downloads happen, you'll get the episodes for free each Wednesday when we make the episodes live. It's easy to do, and it helps us grow the show. As well, if there are topics you'd like us to cover or questions you want me to answer on the air, just shoot me an email. ed@pizzainmotion.com, or you can find me on social media, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, all Miles to Go. With all that, we're going to bring Summer onto the show for our first 10 minutes or less segment on Hawaii. We'll be right back on the Miles to Go podcast. While we're taking a quick break from the show, I wanted to let you know about our monthly Amazon gift card giveaway. Each month, we're going to give a $50 Amazon gift card to one of our mailing list subscribers. As long as you stay subscribed, you'll have a chance to win each time we have a giveaway. We'll always send you the best travel info, and we'll never sell your email address to anyone. You can subscribe right on our homepage, milestogo.boardingarea.com. Back on the Miles to Go podcast with my friend Summer Hull from TPG Family, and I'm super happy to have her on because she is going to launch our new segment idea. We're going to have a handful of these from folks who are experts on certain areas, and today Summer and I are going to do Hawaii in 10 minutes or less. Hey, Summer.
Thank you for having me back, my friend Ed Pizza.
I know, it's been too long, and just for folks that want to be nitty about this, even though we're probably going to call it Hawaii in 10 minutes or less, it's our podcast, so we might go a little longer than 10 minutes, but it's only because...
You can time us, but if history is an indicator, we run long.
We do run long, and Summer has been to Hawaii, I don't even know how many times.
I don't either. It's less than a dozen, but it's getting close to that.
All right, well, that's fair. And so I know there's a ton there, but I think what we want to do with these segments, and by the way, for people timing it, all this explanation doesn't count towards our 10 minutes. But what we want to do with these segments is we want to talk about a place that you probably haven't been yet and cover a couple of very key points about it to get you started in the right direction. Plenty of other content around it. Summer's written plenty about Hawaii. We'll have other posts as well. But the goal here is to sort of paint that picture over the radio, if you will, of why a certain place should be on your list. And we started with Hawaii for one single reason, which is I haven't had Summer on the podcast in a long time. And Hawaii is sort of our running joke in that I haven't been there and Summer loves to give me a ration of crap for it.
Yes. Ed's been to some places like bajillions of times. Hello, Florida. Also guilty, but it hasn't made it to Hawaii, which is beyond unacceptable. So I am running a campaign to convince the Pizza family to head out to Hawaii.
So at the start of that campaign, you know, before we get into the nuts and bolts of how to get there and where to stay and that stuff, you know, let's talk about the why. Why is Hawaii this high on your list that you go back as frequently as you do?
So when people ask me that, and I think they're asking of a list of things I like to do there, and it's really not. The reason I love Hawaii is kind of intangible and sounds a little made up. But when I convinced my parents to go this summer, what I told them was, when you're there, there's things like the air. You don't feel the air. You're not hot. You're not cold. You're not sticky. You're almost floating in this magical way because it feels so perfect. And when you look around, like especially at sunrise and sunset, but almost any time, the colors look like you've filtered them on Instagram. They don't look real, but like you're looking with your eyes, they're real. Time moves slower. Maybe that's because you're waking up early because the times are different. But like days just feel like they last longer there. Memories are made more easily. It's just, and maybe it's just my special place, but it's probably bigger than that because a lot of people love Hawaii. And it's not true in every single part of Hawaii, like not nearly as true in Honolulu for me personally. But in a lot of Hawaii, I feel different. And it's a really cool feeling that I seek time and time again and want others to experience.
Yeah. And never having been myself, I'm sort of, you know, guessing at this point. But I mean, if we look at some of the excitement surrounding Southwest's launch to Hawaii, you know, I mean, certainly there are a lot of first timers there. Don't get me wrong, but I'm sure there are a ton of people that have been before and are really excited about being able to go back to a special place for that cheap.
Yeah, it's and those who have been before, that's why I've been sharing that sort of stuff online. Like I probably sound like a spokesperson for the islands or Southwest or someone, but really I'm just a spokesperson for wanting other people to have that feeling because it's really, really cool.
I love it. Okay, so let's talk about how to get there. You know, what if you had to pick, what sort of airlines would you have folks focus on to get there for? Let's do two. Let's do one for comfort, like an opportunity to potentially use miles for first class, and then if you're going low cost, you know, where you would hunt for the lowest fares.
Yeah, so Hawaii's far. Fact for most of us, West Coast, it's obviously less far. You're only talking 5.5-6 hours. But for the rest of us, like we could probably get to Europe in the same amount of time, at least Western Europe. So there are lie flats to Hawaii. There's not as many as there are to Europe, but they do exist from Delta and American and United. And I won't quote the exact routes because it sometimes changes. But if you search online, you'll find them. And we've done that when we can. We've done that from Houston and we've done that from Dallas, but they're expensive. You're not going to probably find that on the lower end of the award chart. It's going to be like the as high as they can charge amount on the award chart. And upgrades are generally not free, even if you have elite status. So those that they exist and they're great. And if you're going to red eye home, I think it's worth exploring that cost. But it's not the way I do Hawaii most of the time anymore. Now, mostly what we're doing, this will be the first time to bring my three-year-old. And three is the first time I brought my first daughter when she was three. And for kids who are younger or people who just don't like flying for 9 hours, I highly recommend breaking it up on the West Coast, coming and going. And then it doesn't really matter who you're flying. And that's what we're doing. And if you were flying Southwest, you'd have to connect on the West Coast anyway, unless you live there. So personally, I mean, check the lie flat options, but for most of us, if you want to break it up, consider sleeping on the West Coast coming and going. That's what we're doing this summer.
Yeah. And with those long flights, it certainly does make for a longer trip. And it's a part of why we haven't gone living on the East Coast, because I do think I would want to do it that way. I think I would want to break up the flights going and coming. This may be the wrong question to ask, but for a first timer, is there a right island to start with?
There's a wrong island to start with. There's a lot of really good answers. And I'll admit, when I first went to Hawaii, I was 22, I think, and I was graduating from NYU and I was broke as a joke, but I had airline miles. And this is actually what started my whole hook into airline miles, really. I had enough airline miles for me and my boyfriend at the time to go to Hawaii. And so I cashed them in. And everything else was done on a broke college graduate's budget. So we stayed exclusively on Waikiki. I mean, we explored more of Oahu than just Waikiki, but we spent all of our nights and a bulk of our time there. And I still fell in love with the island, even doing that, because I was 22 and it was exciting. But I think that that is definitely the only wrong way to do Hawaii. Oahu, you can just stay on Oahu if you want. That's not doing Hawaii wrong. But don't only spend your time on Waikiki. That's the only way that you probably not experience the full magic that the islands have to offer. Beyond that, I think Maui is really, really great. I like it better as a couples trip than a family destination personally. I think Kauai has the magical balance of all of it. And the Big Island seems to also offer a lot of diversity and adventure. So we're going there for the first time in June.
So if we're talking about somebody who's a first timer and we're thinking that in either one direction or both, they're going to plot, you know, a layover on the West Coast, if they live on the East Coast like I do, how many days, you know, knowing that we've got a lot of transit time in there, how many days is like the shortest amount you'd want to go to Hawaii for? Not counting travel, how many days would you want on the ground to say that it was worthwhile?
I mean, I'm a total idiot, so I've gone for a night before, but I don't recommend that for most people. So Josh and I have done 3-day trips, actually 3 days in Hawaii or 3 nights in Hawaii, and really enjoyed it. I think that you certainly wouldn't want kids for a trip that short. And you, I mean, that's not the ideal, but we have enjoyed 3-night trips. But I would say 4 is the minimum for normal people. I wouldn't recommend going below 4 actual nights you're spending in Hawaii. And if you are doing a trip as short as 4 nights, I would spend them all on one island.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. So any thoughts on where to stay? Any hotels or where not to stay? Any hotels you stayed at that you would or would not recommend?
I have so many thoughts. But to summarize, there's nothing wrong with one night in Waikiki. We're doing that this summer. My parents want to see Pearl Harbor. We want to hike Diamond Head. It's a logical starting or ending point. So you're not doing it wrong if you spend one night in Waikiki, Honolulu. That's fine. You probably don't need more than one. But the places I've loved the most, I used to love the St. Regis on Kauai. It's no longer a St. Regis. Still exists, but you can't use your Marriott points there anymore. So my favorites currently are the Grand Hyatt Kauai, which is on the southern sunny side of Kauai. It is a mega resort. You may walk 10 miles a day there, literally getting from one thing to another. So it's a mega resort, but it's an amazingly well done, beautiful mega resort. Has a club lounge that's worth it if you can get access. It's 25,000 Hyatt points a night. On Maui, the Hyatt Regency Maui is a really good, well-rounded resort destination. It's also 25,000 Hyatt points a night. The Andaz at Wailea and the Grand Wailea are also on another part of Maui. Andaz will cost you 30,000 Hyatt points a night now. And the Hilton property is at the top of their award chart, the Grand Wailea. So if you have a weekend Hilton award night, that's a great place to use it. And we haven't stayed there yet. We've stayed at all the other ones I mentioned, but I've heard good things. So short answer is, if you have Hyatt points, I would look to the Grand Hyatt Kauai or the Andaz Wailea or the Hyatt Regency Maui.
Yeah, lots of good choices there for Hyatt folks. I've heard good reviews on those, not just from you, but from other folks. And I do think it's entirely possible we could pull off the 10 minutes or less if we throw out that intro part. It's not part of our 10 minutes. In like 90 seconds or less, what's your like final takeaway on, you know, why Ed needs to get to Hawaii sooner than later?
It's far, no doubt. But you're going to forget that once you experience Hawaii. And the weather is part of it. Maybe it won't feel magical to you, but the weather's undeniably amazing. The opportunities to just have your family outside and not sweltering in the heat or being cold are great. Take some surf lessons, eat shave ice every day, take a helicopter tour of Kauai, eat poke bowls, and just soak it in. It is, I can promise you, it'll be one of the trips that you remember, and it won't get blurred in with those other long weekends or, you know, opportunities that we've been lucky enough to have. And I know you've been lucky enough to have. Those Hawaii trips for you and your kids will be the ones that stand out above most of the rest.
I love it. All right. Well, before we run out of here, tell folks where they can find you when you're not hopping on the podcast with me and going to Hawaii.
So you'll find me on Twitter at Mommy Points, all one word, MOMMY points. Or I write just about every day on the Points Guy, TPG Family, or you can get there just by typing mommypoints.com in your browser.
I love it all. Summer, thanks so much for being on. Safe travels.
Thanks, Ed.
We'll be right back on the Miles to Go podcast. Back for another deal segment on the Miles to Go podcast. And if it's deals, it's Jen from Deals We Like. Hey, Jen.
Hey, Ed. Thanks for having me again.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting because, you know, Amex offers were like the rage for years and years and years. And then they've sort of died down a bit because, mm-hmm. you know, you obviously can't do them on a bunch of different cards the way you used to be able to. And then, you know, every once in a while we'll have these sorts of offers where Hilton's got five all pretty darn good Amex offers out now for different Hilton brands.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you. I was on a huge high for many, many years with American Express offers. I mean, I wrote about it all the time. I've talked about it on your podcast quite often. And recently they've been pretty bad, to say it bluntly. And I don't know, I kind of disconnected myself because it was kind of like one of those like REP moments. But right now they are back with some pretty good offers, actually. And it's, if you are a Hilton traveler, you'll definitely want to take advantage and listen to this because it could save you a lot of money.
Yeah, I think across the five offers, it's a total of $275.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So they came out with five different offers. So ultimately, they kind of separated their different types of properties under the Hilton umbrella. So there's a Hilton American Express offer, there's a Homeward Suites and Home 2 Suites offer, a Hilton Garden Inn offer, a Waldorf Astoria and Conrad offer, and a DoubleTree offer. So five total. In the past, when we see offers, sometimes it's just Hilton. So you're only able to stay at that type of property. Now you can kind of pick, I think it's most of the properties. I mean, of course, there's more than seven, I think, different Hilton brands under the umbrella.
I think there's more than 70, but sure.
Yeah, exactly. But these are definitely the more popular ones. So this is great for, you know, business travelers, personal travel, people looking to stay in the cities, resorts. I mean, they kind of have it all, which is really nice. They all have different type of spend thresholds. So you'll have to take a look to see what that particular property spend threshold is. And then a different statement credit. Usually they're anywhere between, you know, $30 to $100, depending on their brand you're looking at. And with these ones, they all have different expiration dates too. But the reservation has to be made and paid for by the expiration date. So if you're able to get like a prepaid stay, even though you're staying post the expiration date, as long as that charge hits your statement credit, it should still trigger, you know, the $100 back or whatever it is for that particular brand. So that's one thing to know. Now, if it's not a prepaid stay, and even though you make your reservation by the expiration date and you're not staying till a future time, that will not trigger the statement credit. American Express doesn't really know nor care when your stay occurs. It just cares when it hits your bill.
Yeah, and that's a great tip for folks so they don't get caught thinking that they're qualifying for this when they're not. And just to give folks an example, you'll be able to see all the offers on Jen's blog, but, you know, using the Homewood Suites as an example or Home 2, because they're both part of the same offer, you know, a great brand for families if you're traveling around the U.S. and you're looking for a little bit more space, a $250 or more charge at a Homewood Suites property gets you a $50 Amex statement credit. So, I mean, that's, you know, that's breakfast or dinner for the family.
Absolutely. And while there are five offers, you might not see all five on every single one of your American Express credit cards. You'll have to go into your American Express accounts, sift through, you know, your various cards and see which ones you are eligible for and make sure to add those to that specific card. Hopefully you have them all amongst your American Express cards. I know I had them all eventually once I went through every single account I have, but they were all on different cards. So keep that in mind when you go and look at them.
For sure. And guys, just in summary, I think the big thing to remember here is that, you know, these cards, a lot of them have annual fees. And so these sorts of offers can be a great way to burn down that annual fee and make sure that the card is actually, quote unquote, free in your pocket for whenever you have that next great moment.
Absolutely.
And that's why I love having John Din on to talk about this stuff, you know, because, you know, she also brought up the point, which I think is a great point about, hey, like, let's make sure that the stay actually occurs in the time period or that you're prepaying a hotel stay, which, Jen, I think is a great tip for folks to take advantage of.
Absolutely. And another quick tip is, you know, if you're trying to use points, you can go ahead and use points for your stay, and any incidentals that are put on your bill will also count towards that spend requirement. So let's say you have an upcoming, you know, stay at a Hilton resort and you're using points, which many of you will, if you're, you know, dining out, eating at the, you know, drinking at the bar, even lift tickets that you put on your hotel bill, anything that's put on your hotel bill will count towards that minimum spend. So if you're spending $250 on various incidental activities and dining, you'll still be able to get that $50 statement credit at a Hilton resort, even when you're using your points.
Awesome. Jen, thanks a bunch for being on again. Tell folks where they can find you when you're not hanging out here with me.
Absolutely. You can find me at my blog, dealswelike.com, via social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, everything at dealswelike, or send me an email at dealswelike@gmail.com.
Awesome. Thanks a bunch, Jen. Safe travels. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, you too.
And we'll be right back on the Miles to Go podcast. Hey guys, if you're looking for a new podcast, there's one that launched recently that should definitely get your attention. My friend Richard Kerr, who started the Award Travel 101 Facebook group, launched his podcast. And I've told him in the past he's absolutely got a face built for podcasting, but he's also got a real knack for it as well. One of his very first episodes is one that'll probably bring a tear to your eye, but it's a really heartwarming story as well about how points and miles have helped change someone's life. And I love hearing stories like that. I also love laughing with Richard, and you'll hear me doing that on a future episode. But I can't wait to hear more of what he's got to share in the air. He's got a great knack for talking to people and making stuff sound very approachable in the world of miles and points. So go find the Award Travel 101 podcast. Download it on Apple Podcasts, Google, all those places where you find our podcast, and drop me a note and let me know what you think of it. That's the Award Travel 101 podcast with Richard Kerr. Now, back to the show. Back on the Miles to Go podcast, and we've got Leslie back from Trips with Tykes, who was good enough to help us with Hawaii recently, and we're moving over to one of my favorite topics, which is Disney. And since she lives out on the left coast, she knows a whole lot more about Disneyland than I do. Don't you, Leslie?
I'd say that's probably fair. I've been probably 30 times in my adult life. So I'm there quite often and have two trips planned in the month of March.
Wow. That's a lot of trips.
It is. It's a tough job, but somebody's going to do it.
You know, it's funny. I do wonder, you know, my kids tell me, because we've been a bunch of times too. I actually haven't counted. I don't think 30, not to Disneyland, Disney parks in general. You know, they always say that they understand how lucky they really are, because for most kids, it's a once in a lifetime sort of trip. I do wonder when they say, yes, Dad, we totally understand, if they really do understand how lucky it is to be able to go to places like this every year and sometimes multiple times a year.
I know. I worry about that too, about sort of thinking this is a normal thing to do. But I try regularly to explain that this is mom's job and to hammer home just how awesome the opportunities are. So it's a struggle.
For sure. And today's struggle is an interesting and unique one. You know, for folks that that don't spend a lot of time at Disneyland like me, I would say surprised to learn, because I remembered Disneyland from the first when we went back with kids, you know, from when I was there as a kid. But you know, they're sort of like a have and a have not, if you will, in terms of Disney World has lots and lots of on-site properties and Disneyland does not. And so from a, if staying on site is important, there are, you know, two main issues, and you address these in your post. One is, you know, just total availability of rooms. And then obviously because of the supply and demand, the prices can be quite high if you want the benefits of staying on site at Disneyland.
Yeah, that's right. So there are only three on-property hotels at Disneyland, and there were plans for a fourth, but it got scrapped very recently due to some battles with the city of Anaheim. It's a love-hate relationship between the parks and the city. So yeah, the number of rooms are not getting any bigger, and three hotels for a theme park, you know, the size of Disneyland is just not enough. And, you know, there's not the usual tiers that people are used to at Disney World, the value, the moderate, the deluxe. They're all pretty much deluxe, and maybe Paradise Pier is a little bit cheaper, could be a little closer to a moderate. But yeah, you've got to definitely have the gold cards lined up to be able to stay on property at Disneyland, because it does not come cheap.
No, it certainly doesn't. And the two we're going to focus on today are reflected in the post that we're going to link to in the show notes. And that's the Disneyland Hotel versus the Grand Californian. And you've got experience staying at both of them. So I'm curious to hear, and you compare the back and forth, and not to totally put you on the spot, but I am curious to hear, you know, if you had to pick one without price being an object, which one you would choose to stay at.
Yeah, there's no question in my mind. It's the Disneyland Hotel. That is probably my favorite hotel of all time ever. It's just one of these places where you step inside the lobby. If you're a Disney geek, a true super fan like you and I are, you step inside the lobby, you just kind of feel the presence of Walt somewhere out there. I don't know. I mean, the history of the hotel, it dates back to the year of the founding of Disneyland. It opened about 6 months after Disneyland itself and was opened by a good friend of Walt. And, you know, anybody who's anybody in those eras stayed there at this hotel. So I can just kind of feel the history when I step in there. And there's a lot more Disney theming there. So if you're a Disney fan, that's where you what you want to see. But if you're kind of a little bit of a Disney skeptic and you want like a nicer hotel, then, you know, probably the Grand Californian is going to fit that bill. It's more recently renovated and it's sort of, you know, going after the luxury crowd, the people with the gold cards that we mentioned.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's funny because when I was reading your post, the one thing that I saw that really perked my ears up, and I haven't told my kids this yet because I would then be, you know, harassed until I booked us a stay there, is that, and again, this is really like the true Disney nerd side of me, as Leslie notes, we're definitely fanatics, that at the Disneyland Hotel, the rooms have headboards that have a light switch, and the headboard plays Disney themed music for you. A Dream is a Wish, which, love that sort of detail, and the fact that they've got hidden Mickeys hidden throughout the room, because that's just, you know, our family loves hunting for hidden Mickeys.
Yeah, no, it's super special. The headboard is just amazing. You flip a little switch that actually has Tinkerbell next to it, and, you know, lights up with these fireworks. My kids actually leave it on when we stay there at night as their nightlight. So, you know, when you come home, it's quite the letdown.
Oh, I love it. All right. Well, not everybody else may pick the hotel for the headboard like you and I would. You know, let's talk about amenities between the two properties. When you think about things like pools, if you're going to take a day away from the parks, which property would you prefer based on the pools?
The pools are definitely better at the Disneyland Hotel. They have a giant structure in the middle of the courtyard of the hotel, and there are monorail water slides that are part of the pool system at the Disneyland Hotel. So, I mean, sort of in keeping with the theme of the Disneyland Hotel is the one that's the more over the top and themed and more just Disney everything, then the pools go along with that. And so definitely if you're going to spend a day at the pools, that's the hotel that you want to stay in. And the Grand Californian one is, you know, very nice. It's got a water slide as well that goes around a redwood tree, but it's definitely much more low key. And I mean, you know, but still most of the time kids are happy with someplace to swim, period. So it's not, you're not going to be disappointed with either, but one definitely takes the cake.
Yeah. And I'm curious, in the times that you stayed there, you know, we've stayed offsite, and we've stayed at a variety of onsite properties at Disney World. And I've seen all across the board in terms of how many people are at the pools when we're there. What are the crowds like when you've stayed at these properties at the pools?
It really depends upon the weather and the time of year a little bit, whether people are taking maybe longer vacations or just coming in for like a quick weekend trip. So when the weather's nice, I mean, the pools can get pretty crowded, especially at the Disneyland Hotel, but it's not overwhelming. It's not like the you can't, you know, find a pool chair or something like that. You might have to wait a little while for that monorail water slide that I mentioned, but they're both pretty spacious. So I don't feel like it's completely crushing. So yeah, I haven't had anything super negative at either place.
And I know when we talk about restaurants and bars and stuff like that, that you're a huge fan of Trader Sam's, which is sort of an original at the Disneyland Hotel. Do you normally, when you're taking a trip there, or if somebody was a first timer and they're staying either at Disneyland Hotel or at a Grand Californian, do you think that, you know, given what's in the park and around for restaurants, are they likely to eat at the restaurants in the hotels? Are they more likely to eat in the parks if they're on, say, a week-long vacation? You know, what's the general gist of the food inside the hotels versus what's available inside the parks?
Yeah, it really depends upon the type of vacation that you're taking. I think at Disneyland, there are a lot more people who come in for two nights and head out. And for those kind of vacationers, you may not have time to eat at your hotel. You're probably going to be spending most of your time in the parks. But yeah, if you're on a longer trip, then I think it's very likely that you will eat in your hotel. Especially, we like to do it on our arrival day or our departure day, because all of the Disneyland hotels have character meals. And so sometimes it's more convenient. You know, you don't spend a day paying for a park ticket, but you still get your Disney experience by choosing a character breakfast or a character dinner, depending upon what hotel and what restaurant has what. But we really like to do that. But yeah, I mean, I think it really just depends. Are you somebody who's going to spend your entire day in the parks from rope drop to close? That's how we roll, my family. We the forced march of happiness through all of the rides, as we like to say. But for people who are taking it slower, then I think it's much more likely you'll dine at your hotel.
Yeah, and because I don't have a ton of experience in Disneyland and haven't done the extensive planning of trips, we've sort of freewheeled it when we've gone. We haven't done, to my knowledge that I can recall, we haven't really done any like hardcore sit down meals in the parks, and we didn't stay on site. Whereas, you know, with Disney World, I'd say at least every other trip, we find ourselves in a place like Crystal Palace in Magic Kingdom, where it's a nice sit down buffet and it's air conditioned and it gives us a break from the day to sort of slow down. You know, there's, you know, certain restaurants, you know, back when our daughter was younger, we would do Cinderella's Royal Table. And so there were things that were definitely draws inside the park. So, you know, the food that was at our hotel was less important. Whereas in this case, it almost feels, just based on some of the things that you outlined with the character meals and stuff, that that there's a good amount of stuff that's quote unquote destination dining inside the Grand Californian and the Disneyland Hotel.
Yeah, I think that's right. And part of it is just because both hotels are within walking distance of the parks. So even when I'm not necessarily staying at an on-property Disneyland hotel, it's not that hard for us to hop out of the park and go to one of these hotels for a meal if it's something that we really want to do. I mean, the Grand Californian has a direct entrance into Disney California Adventure. So it's honestly just as close to hop to a character meal at Storyteller's Cafe as it is to hop across the Esplanade and go to Disneyland Park for a character meal there.
Yeah, for sure. No, that's a good point. And I mean, I think the only thing I can think of that's walking distance to a park that has an excellent meal at Disney World would be Chef Mickey's, which is a favorite of ours. So in terms of a character meal. So, you know, in your experience, you know, for folks that are coming for the first time, you know, if they're going to be there, you know, let's say longer than a weekend, if you will, if first time trip, you know, 5 to 7 days, should they be considering these properties on site, or do you think that they'll be able to find everything they need if they stay off site?
I mean, given the cost of these hotels, and we haven't put any round numbers on it, there are not a lot of families that are going to have the budget to stay for 7 nights at either of these hotels. The Grand Californian is at least $500, but well into the $600 or $700 a night range for a standard room. We're not talking, you know, any of the special views or anything like that. So, I mean, it's more in my mind than the average price of the Grand Floridian or Polynesian, you know, on average, I would say. And then the Disneyland Hotel is about $400 to $550 a night. So, I mean, it adds up quickly. So I tend to stay at these hotels when I am going to be there for maybe a weekend or a long weekend, and the proximity really matters. So, and there are not as many on-property benefits at Disneyland. So sometimes you can get what you need, saving a lot of money staying off-site if you're there for a longer period of time.
Yeah, and I think we, you know, one of the things to mention to folks is, you know, the Grand Californian does have some Disney Vacation Club rooms. I'm a 10-year owner of Disney Vacation Club, and I, you know, do rent my points out occasionally when we can't use them all. And I've had folks ask me, you know, a number of times if I can help them with a DVC rental there. And I can honestly say, I don't think I've ever seen anything close to availability at that property, because I don't own at that resort. And from everything I've heard, it books up, you know, as soon as the 11-month window opens. So there aren't a ton of ways to get cheap rooms at either of these properties.
Yeah, that's right. And I'm glad to hear that from somebody who is a DVC member, because I've certainly looked on occasion and have never had any luck. So I've quit looking over the last couple of years because it does seem to really book up.
Yeah, I think if you're going to stay, you know, if the goal is to stay at the Disney Grand Californian, and that's why you're buying into Disney Vacation Club, then you need to buy at the Grand Californian, because you're going to need that 11-month window. And the unfortunate thing for us that we learned after buying DVC is, you know, we don't really plan vacations 11 months out. So home resort preference wasn't a big thing for us in the end. And, you know, we learned that lesson a little bit the hard way, but we certainly know it now.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, thanks so much for coming on. We're bringing Leslie back again soon to talk more about on-site versus off-site. So stay tuned for that as we dig a little bit deeper into how to put together the best Disneyland vacation we can. But until we have you back again, tell folks where they can find you in the meantime.
Yes, my blog is tripswithtykes.com, T-Y-K-E-S, and I am everywhere on social media at Trips with Tykes as well. And of course, I have my own Disney podcast with Joe Chung of As the Joe Flies, and that's Disney Deciphered.
Disney Deciphered, definitely a great listen. It's evergreen content. There's short episodes each week that help you break down certain parts of a trip. And for somebody who doesn't have a ton of Disney experience and likes podcasts, it's a great way to get a bunch of information that helps make those trips so much better. Leslie, thanks a bunch for being on with us again. We'll talk to you soon. Safe travels.
Thanks, Ed.
We'll be right back on the Miles to Go podcast. And back to wrap up this week's show with the final two pennies. As you guys may have heard throughout the last couple of shows, my friend Richard from Ward Travel 101 launched a podcast recently, and he's had a couple of really good stories on there about travel and, you know, fulfilling your life dreams, filling up your bucket list. But this week, he released an episode that I think touches close to home for me because, as you guys know, I have kids, and certainly there's always this fear of, you know, are they going to be healthy and how do we keep them safe? And Richard had a bit of a scare with one of his kids this week, so I definitely encourage you to go over there and listen to it. You know, the subject here of the final two pennies has to do with insurance, and, you know, Richard brings up some interesting points about how his family is dealing with health insurance. But I think it's also worth noting that travel insurance is something that you guys should think about. And to be clear, I've, you know, been an opponent of travel insurance for quite some time. Not getting paid to say this, not advocating for any specific company. I'm not going to make any money if you go out and buy travel insurance, to be clear. But I didn't have travel insurance for many years, and I travel a decent amount internationally for work. Obviously travel domestically for work as well, and then, you know, the regular family travel. And I had shied away from the idea of travel insurance because I didn't know a lot about it. You know, admittedly, I was negative on the concept overall, and it was something that I didn't know much about. So, you know, bad on my part. And what I found when the dust settled was that if I wanted a supplemental insurance policy for work that covered, you know, the occasional international trips as well as my domestic travel, sort of over and above what my standard health insurance would cover, it was, I won't say it was cheap, but the expense was minimal compared to the risk. So, you know, it cost me in the neighborhood of, like, call it, let's say, $300 to get a policy that covered me and also covers my family. And the big benefits there, really, for me, the thing that I'm focusing on is when I'm overseas, making sure that I've got, you know, access to great medical care and that I've got the ability to be lifted back into the U.S. if that's necessary to get good care. And that's not something that my the health insurance that I get from my company covers. So I think the thing that I missed out on for a number of years, and, you know, thankfully we didn't have any issues when we were traveling, was that a travel insurance policy for your family can actually be fairly affordable. It doesn't mean it's the right fit for everyone, but I do have some friends who have had problems overseas, and, you know, gosh, I mean, if they had to pay those bills out of pocket, I'm not entirely sure what would have happened, because it does have the ability to potentially bankrupt someone to, you know, fly someone from, say, Europe back to the U.S. to get medical care. So, you know, I think it's just something to touch on. I'm definitely going to dig in more deeply. I did a bunch of research for the insurance that I bought, and so I'm going to put some posts together on my blog, Pizza in Motion, to help folks understand a little bit of the research that I did in case they're thinking about going down the same path. So I think the initial message is just a reminder from me that if you don't know a lot about it, it's probably worth doing some reading to see if it's something that fits your family. It might be cheaper than you think. I'm not advocating any specific companies, you know, just saying in general, might be cheaper than you think to have the sort of protection that you might want just in case something catastrophic happened when you were overseas. That's a full wrap on this week's episode. I want to thank you guys all for tuning in again. If you've got questions that we can help answer or segments or topics that you'd like to see us cover, please reach out to us and let us know. You can email me, ed@pizzainmotion.com, and you can find me on social media, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, all Pizza in Motion. Please subscribe and rate the show if you have a moment. That helps us grow the audience and make sure that you get the episodes each week whenever they're available. And we'd love a positive rating to help us keep growing the show. I've got a bunch of segments in the can, including some more 10 minutes or less segments coming up, including one about Bali, a place that I haven't been to that's far, far away, but definitely is high on my list. Got a couple of segments from Gilbert lined up, which one I couldn't stop laughing the entire time. So you guys are going to love it when we crank that out, as well as a couple more segments on cruising, both for first-time cruisers and folks that are venturing out on multiple cruises. So lots of stuff coming, you know, plenty more to put together. A big thanks this week to Summer, Jen, and Leslie for helping me put on a great show. Thanks to Mike for a great job on the editing. We're working on getting all those segments together for a great show for next week. But until then, we've got miles to go.